Welcome to the Play, Sleep, Grow podcast. This episode explores all things baby sleep space. Whether you're gearing up to design the perfect sleep space for that baby in your belly, or whether the sleep space you have for your baby just isn't working. Today, you're going to find out how exactly a baby sleep expert would craft the perfect sleep space, and how each element will help your baby fall asleep and stay asleep more easily. So freshen up that cup of coffee, switch that load of laundry before you forget, and listen in. You're listening to the Play Sleep Grow podcast. I'm your host, Ashley Thompson. I leveraged my skills as a speech-language pathologist to research and discover the gentlest and most effective sleep training methods and strategies available for our three children, successfully helping them learn to sleep through the night and take regular scheduled naps starting at 3, 4, and 5 months old respectively, effectively reclaiming confidence, structure, and peace in our home, and creating a better, healthier relationship with my husband and our children. On the show, you'll discover bite-sized, actionable strategies for all things baby's sleep and development, and avoid wasting time, money, and tears on strategies that simply don't work. You'll gain a sneak peek into the most reliable evidence-based strategies available. You'll also get exclusive access and discounts to time-saving, headache-crushing tools and our unique Play Sleep Grow sisterhood to make your sleep training journey and your relationship with your child easier and more grace-filled than you ever dreamed possible. Subscribe now and listen in every Monday. So grab a cup of coffee, snuggle that baby close, and welcome. You belong here. Does trying to figure out your baby's ever-changing sleep schedule make you feel like finding a nice, secluded spot and burying your head in the sand? Well, stop the search and step away from the sand. As an exclusive gift to you, I have created a 60-second sleep schedule quiz. All you have to do is complete the 60-second quiz, and a sample sleep schedule specifically for your child will be sent directly to your inbox. And yes, it's completely free. Simply go to www.playsleepgrow.com/sleep-schedule-quiz to claim yours now. And I'll drop a clickable link in the show notes. Welcome back. I'm your host, Ashley Thompson, wife, mom, speech therapist, and pediatric sleep consultant. Today, we'll be diving feet first into all things baby sleep space. We'll talk about all the aspects of your baby sleep space that will help your baby sleep better and why, from temperature to darkness level, from sound machines to airflow, and so much more. You'll learn which elements you need, which elements you should avoid, and which elements don't really matter one way or another. This past weekend, I was presenting at the Babies and Bumps Expo in Cincinnati, Ohio, and I received an excellent question from one of the moms who was attending. She said, "What's your take on the vacuuming around the baby thing?" I was thinking she specifically meant, is it okay to vacuum around my baby? Will it help or hurt? And I responded saying that I don't really see any harm in it, especially if those first couple of months, if it soothes baby. I said that typically people tend to find lower pitch white noise sounds more soothing, like the sounds of an oscillating fan. But for some reason, many babies, and especially those exposed in the early months, seem to be soothed by vacuum sounds. And then she clarified, saying, "Actually, I meant, what about when people say to vacuum and do other household tasks around the baby while the baby is sleeping so baby gets used to the sounds of daily life?" Ah, now I understood. Excellent question. I explained that some families choose to do this, and if it works for them, then that was fine. Personally, I prefer to make sleep easier on my kiddos by providing them with an environment that makes it easier for them to sleep. And then later at the Sleep in the First Year seminar, I expanded on that concept even more. Think of it I said, think of it like when your baby is learning how to walk. I explained, when your baby is learning to walk, would you smear grease on the floor so he can learn to walk in a number of different terrains? No, that would be mean. When your baby is first learning to walk, you want to support their learning and make their success easier and more attainable. Because we want them to succeed, obviously, and we also want to avoid them giving up trying to learn a new skill simply because they never seem to get any traction. We actually do this in the speech therapy world as well. We craft our environment in order to help our clients achieve success in their new and renewed skills. And then, over time, as appropriate, we may relax the specifics of how carefully we manage the environment in order to help them generalize that skill. For example, let's say I'm working with a toddler named Ellie, who's very easily distracted, and we're working on her requesting skills, meaning she needs help asking for things that she needs and wants. I may cover or take down colorful posters on the wall and hang a plain tablecloth over the bookcase that's filled with toys in order to help Ellie focus on her mom and me as we work together to teach her how to ask for things. We intentionally reduce the barriers to help her learn her new skill so she can have the best chance to succeed. And then, after she begins to ask for things consistently to use that new skill, we can begin to add those distractions in as appropriate. Does that mean we're going to intentionally put on a parade while she's trying to ask for a snack? No, because that's unnecessary. But we can eventually uncover those posters and toys or take her into a room with other people in it because she'll need to use her new skill in those different environments too. And the same is true of sleep. We're going to carefully design baby's sleep space so we can minimize the barriers preventing our kids from quality sleep and learning independent sleep skills as easily as possible. And if, down the line, we need to loosen our carefully crafted environment, we can. We want to work with our kiddos' circadian rhythm and with their natural sleep processes, not against them. Does that make sense? First, let's talk about safety. Because, of course, this is the most important way to support our baby's sleep. The American Academy of Pediatrics, the AAP, states that this is on, quote, a firm, flat, non-inclined sleep surface, end quote, designed specifically for infants. And when your baby is of toddler and young child age, specifically designed for toddlers and young children. They also say not to use soft, squishy items like pillows or quilts, fur-like materials, etc. Quote, away and keep those away from the infant's sleep area to reduce the risk of SIDS, which is sudden infant death syndrome, suffocation, entrapment and wedging, and strangulation, end quote. They also recommend against baby sleeping on a sofa or armchair so that if you yourself are tired, be very careful to avoid falling asleep with your baby on you or next to you on the sofa or armchair. One of the top hazards of this is because it's very easy for baby to accidentally slip into a position where they can't breathe if you accidentally fall asleep. And I say this with absolutely no judgment in my heart. I myself have fallen asleep on the couch with my daughter, my infant daughter, and very nearly dropped her off the edge of the side of the couch before I jolted awake. Even if you're a light sleeper like I am, you can't be aware of your baby while you're asleep. So please just be careful. The AAP also recommends to keep any cords, curtains, or other objects away from your baby's bed to protect that sweet baby from accidentally grabbing something or getting tangled in something, resulting in any of the terrible things that we just mentioned. Sheets and bedding should be the correct size for the bed they're on. and no mesh or other bumpers around the baby's crib. And the surface should stay flat, not conforming to the baby's shape, etc. So this means no pillow toppers or memory foam or hammocks, etc. Because baby structures are so compact at this age that it's so much easier for them to get into a position where they can't breathe. And then they don't have the motor control or awareness to get out of that dangerous position. These types of surfaces may be wonderful for us as adults, but we also have way better motor control and a different airway structure than our young babies have. The AAP also recommends that baby's bed be in the parent's bedroom for at least the first 6 months. They call it room sharing without bed sharing. The AAP also recommends that there should be nothing in the baby's bed aside from baby for the first 12 months. This means no pillows or quilts or loose blankets or even lovies, etc. They also recommend that the mattress for baby's sleep space be specifically designed for the bed that it's in. For example, use the specific travel crib mattress that was designed for the travel crib you have. Make sure there's no gaps in between the edges of the mattress and the side of the bed, and that the mattress fits flat and snug with no incline. It's also highly recommended that all furniture in the room that could potentially tip over be tethered to the wall. And this is especially important once your child reaches the age of toddler or big kid bed, where they can get in and out of bed on their own, whether you're in the room with them or not. Additionally, the AAP recommends that we not use any weighted blankets or objects on or near our babies. And lastly, if you choose to baby wear for naps or anytime your baby is sleeping, the AAP reminds us to be sure that baby's head is up and above the fabric. The face is visible and the nose and mouth are clear of obstruction. And if we breastfeed the baby while they're in the carrier, to reposition the baby with his head up and clear of the fabric and his airway clear once he's finished feeding. Now, as I'm sure you know, this list is not exhaustive. And if you'd like to read more on the topic of sleep space safety, I'll drop a clickable link in the show notes. And of course, feel free to ask your child's pediatrician for more guidance. Next, let's talk about the level of darkness in your baby's sleep space. As we mentioned in the beginning of the episode, we often have very well-meaning moms and dads and family and friends who will insist that you get baby used to sleeping in all kinds of environments so that they can learn to sleep anywhere. And while that may work for some kiddos, it's not actually typical because it's like fighting against a kiddo's typical natural sleep needs instead of working with them. I will say in the very beginning, when your baby is a newborn, and for those first couple of weeks and even months, they may very well be able to sleep in a variety of environments. Newborns are typically very tired little nuggets, and their circadian rhythms aren't developed at that stage. They also aren't making melatonin yet, that hormone that makes you feel sleepy, but they can receive the mother's naturally produced melatonin from breast milk, especially when breastfed directly at night and when using milk that was pumped at night. One study reports that, quote, preterm infants can respond to light as early as the corrected gestational age of 30 weeks and start to develop circadian behavioral rhythms in a light-dark cycle. End quote. The same study goes on to say that, quote, in full-term infants, circadian rhythm or circadian system outputs mature progressively after birth with rhythms in body temperature, sleep-wake cycles, and hormone production generally developing between 0 and 3 months of age, end quote. In those early months, I highly recommend using light and darkness intentionally to help support your baby's sleep-wake cycles and avoid day-night confusion. This means that baby can sleep in darkness during the day, but should be woken at regular intervals in order to feed baby and prevent day-night confusion. I also recommend that at night, after the baby is put to bed between 8 and 10 p.m. in those first couple months, night feeds are completed in the dark or with a dim red-colored nightlight in order to avoid day-night confusion. And then, beginning around 2 to 3 months, I recommend baby sleep in darkness as much as possible in order to support healthy, restful, consolidated sleep. I know this isn't always doable in those earliest months because baby is sleeping so much and things simply need to get done around the house. You may have other kiddos that need to be tended to, etc. Simply do your best. And when I say dark, I mean dark, as in so dark you can't see your hand in front of your face. This is for a couple of reasons. For one, it removes distraction. The older your baby grows, the more her vision is going to develop and her curiosity right alongside it. And who wants to sleep when there's a billion new and exciting things to look at? Additionally, somewhere in those first few months, your baby will also begin producing her own melatonin, especially at night, and darkness helps to promote that melatonin production. And finally, darkness helps to reduce stimulation around baby. Lights and sounds and other stimuli around baby can overwhelm baby and making her sleep space as dark as possible can help to reduce or even eliminate some of those stimuli for a little while. If you like access to a visual chart of the different levels of room darkness, more in-depth discussion of the whys of darkness, and expert tips on how to make baby's sleep space as dark as possible, I have an article about exactly this, and I'll link to it in the show notes. All right, now let's move on to the topic of room temperature. As you may already know, your body temperature drops when you fall asleep. This holds true for your little nugget too. When possible, I recommend keeping your baby's sleep space around 68 to 70 degrees Fahrenheit, which is about 20 to 21 degrees Celsius, and dressing them in no more than one layer more than you would feel comfortable in that space. This way, when baby is trying to fall asleep, his body isn't fighting to maintain that slightly lower body temperature to keep him asleep. Higher temperatures can sometimes make us feel sleepy, but we actually sleep better in those lower temperatures we just mentioned, the 68 to 70 degrees Fahrenheit, 20 to 21 degrees Celsius. Next, let's discuss the noise in your baby's sleep space. How noisy should my baby's sleep space be? Should I try to control the noise in my baby's sleep space? Is white noise really even necessary? Does the type of white noise matter? Again, you may have heard that you should let baby get used to those house noises. And for sure, when baby is awake, we don't want to tiptoe around him. But when he's asleep, and especially if he's having trouble falling asleep or staying asleep, then let's support his sleep instead of making it harder on him unnecessarily. And just like when we talked about light in baby's sleep space, he may sleep better in different noise levels as a newborn. And then when he hits that transition stage around 3 to 4 months, when he experiences the 4 month sleep regression, transitioning to 4 sleep stages, 2 of which are light sleep and easy to be awoken from, and at the same time, when he's getting more and more aware of his surroundings, he may begin to struggle more and more with noises startling him from sleep. I recommend using white noise. whether from a white noise machine or a simple oscillating fan in baby's sleep space. Preferably a pink or brown hued white noise, which means a lower pitch noise. No birds, no storm sounds or even waves, something consistent, like a shh sound. White noise can be soothing, and at the same time cover up the other noises in baby's sleep environment that may startle him awake. From what I've read, as long as you're not placing the white noise machine right next to baby's bed or turning it up full blast in a small room, most sound machines on the market should not be able to reach the decibel level, the loudness level, that can damage baby's hearing. But if you want to be sure, you can buy a decibel meter to measure the loudness. Just be sure to check the reviews for reliability and accuracy. I don't really recommend the decibel meter apps on your phones because I haven't really tested them to see how accurate they are, and I'm just a little bit wary of them. According to the Hearing Health Foundation, quote, sounds at or below 70 decibels are safe, end quote. And quote, sounds above 70 decibels can be harmful, end quote, when heard over an extended period of time. The higher the decibel level, means the higher the volume, the shorter the amount of time we can be exposed to it before hearing loss sets in. The American Speech Language Hearing Association, ASHA, reports that we can be exposed to sounds at 85 decibels for about 8 hours before damage occurs. And by damage and hearing loss, I mean where the teeny tiny hair cells in our inner ear become damaged and die. Those hair cells, which don't grow back, are vital in our perception of sound. So the more that are damaged and die, the less we can hear. So what you'd want to do is place the sound machine where you intend to have it in the baby's room. Turn it on and then hold the decibel meter in the baby's sleep space where baby's going to be to measure how loud the sound will be for him in that location. Preferably, we want the decibel meter to read at or below 70 decibels in the baby's sleep space. And if it reads up to 85, we should be limiting baby's exposure to that level of volume for less than 8 hours at a time. So let's say that the baby is more soothed by the sound at 85 decibels than 70 decibels. You can technically use that volume level, that 85 decibel level, until baby falls asleep, and then lower the volume to the 70 decibel level. Now let's switch gears and talk about how much to have in baby's sleep space and whether the complexity or simplicity in her sleep space can impact her sleep. In my opinion, a simple sleep space is best. This is both for safety's sake as well as to minimize distraction. In regard to the safety of baby's sleep space, not having crib bumpers and avoiding using loose blankets and lovies and stuffed animals before baby is a year old can help to protect baby from the risk of suffocation. And in regard to avoiding distracting your ever-curious baby, avoid overly distracting decor, especially the kind that lights up and makes sounds or moves, such as the pretend aquarium that attaches to baby's bed or like those solar system lights on the baby's ceiling, because those lights and sounds and movements can very easily distract and prevent a tired baby from getting the sleep he needs, especially the older and more curious he becomes. And lastly, let's talk about the benefits of airflow in your child's sleep space. Fan use and open windows are often preferred during sleep by adults for a number of reasons, airflow and comfort being two common reasons. One research study reported in the Archives of Pediatric and Adolescent Medicine journal completed a retrospective study on the use of fans and open windows in baby sleep space. And they suggested that using fans may be helpful in improving air circulation and managing room temperature greater than or equal to 21 degrees Celsius, which if you remember is about 70 degrees Fahrenheit. Further research on the subject would likely be useful as well. Personally, we use an oscillating fan in my kiddo's room for three reasons: to improve airflow, as a source of white noise, and to help manage room temperature. Whew, and all those are the six of the key qualities to consider when designing your baby's perfect sleep space. Safety, darkness, temperature, noise, simplicity, and airflow. Have more questions? Send me a message on Instagram. My handle is @PlaySleepGrow, or by email at ashley@playsleepgrow.com. You're listening to the Play Sleep Grow podcast. I'm Ashley Thompson, and I can't wait to see you next time. Now go snuggle that clever baby of yours. It's time for them to play, sleep, grow. If you found this episode helpful, would you please share it with your favorite mom friend? My mission with this business is to help 1,000 growing families regain peace and security through one-on-one consulting for sleep training as quickly and gently as possible. And if you leave me an honest review on Apple Podcasts, screenshot it, and email it to me, I'll send you your pick of one of my three most popular resources. Ending legal note. Please remember that this is a podcast for personal use. It is not medical advice and should not be considered or used as such. I am not a medical sleep professional, and though I am a pediatric sleep consultant and speech-language pathologist, the information I present on this podcast is general information that I have gathered through my own education, research, and experience, and not specific to you or your child. Before implementing any ideas or suggestions I may provide, please clear it with your or your child's doctor first.